Joe. James Joseph Devlin was born on December 27, 1916, in San Francisco, California, to Rose and Jim Devlin. His mother dedicated him to God when he was baptized at St. Paul's Church and given the same name as his father. To distinguish between them, the son was called Joe and his father Jim. Joe was a healthy child. He learned to smile, to walk, to talk, and in time, to bless himself and to say a prayer. The next child after Joe was Margaret, who died a victim of the influenza plague at the age of 2. In the following years, other children were born into the family: Anthony, Paul, Raymond, and Anne Marie. Joe, at age 5, started primary grade schooling at St. Paul Grammar School with the Sisters of the Blessed Virgin Mary to learn reading, writing, arithmetic, and religion, and to play the piano. The second grade sister wanted Joe, a left-handed boy, to write with his right hand. Joe began to stutter, but his stuttering stopped when he was allowed to write with his left hand. In third grade, Joe made his first confession and received his first Holy Communion. The sacrament of confirmation was received in the eighth grade. During his young years, a small seed was planted in Joe's outlook when his mother encouraged him to be kind in helping less fortunate people, whom she called the underdog. This idea had a profound impact on his life. When the opportunity for the 7-year-old Joe to put this lesson into practice, he experienced success as he rescued an underdog. After school, Joe walked past the California Boys Club on the 1 mile distance to his home. One day, outside the club, Joe came upon 2 older boys inflicting pain on a younger boy, Roddy Hilliard. They held Roddy's arms and feet and were swinging him back and forth over a small street fire. The 2 boys ignored Joe when he told them to stop and leave Roddy alone. But when Joe began to hit them, they stopped and ran from his fury. The crying Roddy was rescued. Arriving home, Joe told his mother about the incident. Joe's mother replied, "Joe, you always stick up for the underdog, and that is a very good thing." Joe never forgot his mother's praise or her recommendation, "You always stick up for the underdog, and that is a very good thing." It influenced Joe's attitude for life and was a recurrent theme in many of his activities. He enjoyed helping underdogs. This incident foreshadowed his life's interest and work. At St. Paul's School and in the church, Joe's religious formation developed as every week he made his confession, attended Mass, sang in the choir, and during Lent made the Stations of the Cross. Within St. Paul's Gothic interior, he noticed the 32 beautiful stained glass windows that depicted the life of Christ and added to the prayerful atmosphere. At home, religious pictures and statues of Christ, Mary, and St. Anthony adorned the rooms, along with a number of prayer books, rosaries, scapular medals, a crucifix on the wall, and a large picture of Christ the King placed on the wall in Joe's room. On his 8th birthday, Joe received a gift picture called Christ in the Temple from his mother. Joe later said that when he received that picture, he felt his first desire to become a priest. Above a stairway to the 2nd floor in the hall hung a picture of Christ in the agony of the garden, almost prophetic for Joe's future life. Among a few books at home was Cardinal Nicholas Wiseman's Fabiola, a story of the heroic first-century young martyr's eagerness to die for Christ. It was one of many books Joe enjoyed reading. When he was a priest, Joe gave this book as a gift to inspire religious youngsters. There were a few secular books, such as James Fenimore Cooper's Deerslayer, but most books and reading material were easily obtained at the San Francisco Public Library, just the short distance of 2 houses away. All in the family had library cards. Joe helped his mother with home chores, cutting and carrying wood, sometimes coal for the stove and fireplace, carrying food from the stores, and giving the dog a weekly bath. With his brothers, after meals, he took turns washing and drying dishes. Sometimes, Joe supervised his younger brothers while his mother was out. His brother Paul remembers Joe saying, "I can make or break you, so you better shape up." Joe and Paul were at James Lick Playground 2 blocks from home, and Paul could not believe his ears when he heard the director of the playground tell the police, I don't know who threw the tennis net over the fence, but these two boys caused me a lot of trouble, pointing to Joe and Paul. On opposite street corners, Joe and his brother Anthony sold newspapers. Joe later wrote in one of his memory books, "Just a kid named Joe. What is his other name? I don't know. He sells the daily newspaper, and I buy my newspapers from a kid named Joe." The mile walk to and from St. Paul's school became fun as Joe found wheels and skated to school. He left his skates at Joe Keene's house, a friend and classmate who later was ordained a priest with Joe. His brother Anthony recalls how, as Joe became very skillful on roller skates, he glided on his skates down the steep no hill backward. Anthony would warn Joe of approaching cars at the bottom of the hill. Sometimes, with his brothers, Joe hit golf balls up the dirt hill at Douglas Playground, or played street football with the neighborhood kids, or hiked 5 miles to Mount Davidson's Cross. In warm weather, Joe hiked 5 miles with his friends to the San Francisco Bay to swim at Hunter's Point. In his backyard, Joe built a rabbit hutch, a pole vault pit, and a miniature golf course, all without disturbing the garden area. Indoors, along with reading, Joe enjoyed listening to his homemade crystal radio set. At the age of 13, Joe graduated from St. Paul's Grammar School and entered St. Ignatius High School for 4 years of university preparatory classes conducted by the Jesuit fathers. Joe observed the young Jesuit scholastic teachers who, after their philosophy training and before theology, taught high school classes along with the Jesuit priests. Their presence as good role models helped influence Joe to decide his own vocation. Joe tried out for the football team as a freshman, but Coach Sarge McKenzie encouraged him to wait until his sophomore year. Joe then joined the school's rowing team, which practiced at 5:30 a.m. The oarsmen rowed the choppy bay waters in an oversized boat. Joe later dropped the crew because the early hours and the distance to be traveled made it impractical for him to continue. In his grammar school days, Joe had listened to his father's boxing stories, which, no doubt, encouraged him to imitate his father. One of Joe's friends, John Riley, won a few boxing matches on the St. Philip's boxing team and was considered a good boxer. One day, Johnny and Joe did a little boxing. Joe could see that Johnny's speed, finesse, and boxing knowledge were superior to his own. If he fought Johnny in a bout, Joe knew he would lose. Joe decided to learn to improve his boxing skills to be able to defend himself against older kids. Joe joined the St. Philip's boxing team and put a boxing ring and punching bag in his home basement. He wanted his brothers to learn to box and to be prepared to defend themselves. As a St. Ignatius High School freshman, Joe discovered that his history teacher, George Malley, was the boxing coach at St. John's Parish. The students knew Mr. Malley as a strict disciplinarian who never fraternized with his students. But one day, he made an exception. Joe Devlin told the story of his boxing match with a member of Mr. Malley's team to his brother Ray. St. Philip's team was to compete with St. John's boxing squad. George Malley's best boxer was scheduled to fight Joe Devlin. Mr. Malley believed his fighter was superior and had an edge over Joe, as his boy had won a number of previous bouts. In the first round, Malley's boxer gained more points over Joe, who boxed well but lacked defensive intensity. In the second round, Joe was still short on points, but the pace and fury of the fight changed dramatically after Mr. Malley's boxer tried to push Joe over the ropes. While this was happening, Joe thought, "When I am free of the ropes, I will teach this boxer a lesson." Like his father, Joe would not tolerate anyone trying to push him around. Getting loose of the ropes, he straightened up and seemed to explode as he took the offensive. Joe struck fast right punches into his opponent and pounded his opponent's body with both fists. When Joe's opponent lowered his arms, which had been protecting his face, for a moment, Joe instinctively struck a powerful left punch to his opponent's face, which stunned him. Joe's opponent was dazed and weak in the knees, and he dropped to the mat. He was not able to get off the mat by the count of 10. Joe Devlin was declared the winner of the fight. Next day in history class, Mr. Malley walked around the classroom, and when he came to Joe's desk, he said for all to hear, "Devlin, good fight last night." Joe smiled and realized he had won Mr. Malley's honest respect. Joe won more bouts and smiled as he brought home a golden glove to give his father and mother as a tribute to his boxing ability. Joe was tenacious. Once he decided to do something, he would not quit. His mother said Joe was the most stubborn person she ever knew, with one exception, namely, herself. Joe's high school years passed quickly. Joe worked at his studies and enjoyed sports and social activities, like most of the students. Occasionally, his mother felt anxious as school activities kept him out late at night, having to make 2 or 3 streetcar transfers and traveling a 10-mile ride home. Like most high school students of the day, Joe wore corduroy trousers, and it was trendy to omit the weekly laundry. Joe's mother recognized the value of his Jesuit education and religious formation. She planned for his younger brothers and sisters to follow his examples so that they would graduate on the university level, and they did.